Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the center and its programs, go to www.practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Today we discuss moral dilemmas in treating babies born at the borderline of viability. How small is too small? And how should we decide? Joining us to talk about it is Dr. John Lantos, the John B. Francis Chair in Bioethics at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Hello, Dr. Lantos.
Good morning.
Now, you co-authored a commentary in the February 2009 issue of Pediatrics, which examined the moral implications of babies born as early as 22 weeks of pregnancy. You note that the survival of these tiny babies, called micropreemies, depend on a number of factors, including where they are born. Could you talk about that, please?
Sure. The commentary was examining results reported by researchers in Japan. Japan has had the highest birth weight-specific survival rates of any country in the world for at least a decade. This report, which was a follow-up on one of their earlier descriptions of their survival rates, reported that babies born at 22 weeks of gestation, that's 6 months of gestation, had survival rates of about 30% in Japan. That compares to 5 to 10% at most centers in North America.
Now, why the difference? That will be the obvious first question, I guess.
And the answer is nobody knows. The Japanese just seem to do it better for reasons that nobody understands. Do they have better babies? Do they have a better healthcare system? Do they simply report things differently? Is it real? Isn't it artifact? We just don't know.
Now, it would seem that parents and physicians facing these situations have enormously difficult questions to answer. What kind of issues are they addressing when they have a baby born at 22 weeks? What are some of the questions that they're facing?
So in most cases, the birth of a baby at 22 weeks is a shock, a surprise, and a tragedy for parents. Parents are going into pregnancy expecting, with good reason, that they'll have a healthy full-term baby. Births at these gestational ages are almost always the result of some unexpected catastrophe. So the first issue that parents have to deal with, and that doctors have to deal with as well, is how to change expectations from what they've been hoping for to what they're now facing. The second problem is that what they are facing is radical uncertainty, so that decisions about a baby born at 22, 23, 24 weeks should ideally be informed by knowledge of prognosis. If we could know what would happen to the babies, we'd know what the right thing to do would be. However, at these gestational ages, the range of outcomes covers the waterfront from totally intact survival, kids who are going to survive, thrive, become baseball players or concert musicians or doctors and lawyers, to babies who will die within 24 hours in spite of everything the doctors have to offer, to babies who will survive with profound physical and cognitive impairments. And it's hard to predict which baby will fall in which category.
Well, it seems that that latter point that you make about impairments, handicap, disabilities, are there some issues there where people don't understand whether or not there will be a disability or a handicap? Is it assumed that a baby born at that time in pregnancy will have a handicap or disability of some kind, and that influences how decisions are made?
It's hard to know exactly what parents understand. I haven't seen too many good studies of that, but the media reports of premature baby survival tend to be extreme in one direction or the other. That is, they either describe miracle babies who beat the odds and go on to do phenomenally well, or else they describe babies who are left neurologically devastated, ruining their parents' lives and the lives of everyone else in their family. The more common outcomes are somewhere in between those two. That is, most babies who survive have some problems. They either have mild cerebral palsy or visual problems or maybe some chronic lung disease, but are not neurologically devastated. So the first task for doctors in counseling parents facing these situations is to try to convey the facts in all their uncertainty, but in all their complexity as well.
And you state in your commentary with Dr. William Meadow of the University of Chicago that it seems that there's a choice that is made within that disability on how bad does a disability have to be when it's considered worse than death.
That is the ultimate moral boundary here. That is, many babies could be saved by medical technology if doctors and parents agree to go for it, to provide everything that a tertiary care center can offer. But if doctors and parents together decide that the likelihood of a bad outcome, that is survival with profound neurologic deficits, is worse than death, then they can withhold or withdraw life-sustaining treatment and provide comfort care or palliative care and make sure the baby is comfortable during the dying process. That's an agonizing decision for doctors and parents in almost every case.
Well, now, you've written about this before. We've talked about it before, about almost a prejudice against treating these micropremies, and you use the word prejudice in that commentary with Dr. Meadow.
When we talk about prejudice, what we are describing is a phenomenon whereby decisions to withhold life-sustaining treatment for premature babies seem to use different criteria than decisions for older children or adults. A recent study from Oregon reported that parents were offered the option of withholding life-sustaining treatment if their babies had less than a 75% chance of a good outcome. Imagine a 6-year-old brought in after a motor vehicle accident and the doctor's telling the parents your baby has a 75% chance of survival and of intact survival, and the parents saying, no, that seems too low. We'd rather have you just provide comfort care. Parents wouldn't make that choice. Doctors probably wouldn't offer that choice. And the reason, we think, is because people think about premature babies as being in a separate moral category than older children, or certainly than adults.
Your point then is that the criteria should be the same for micropremies as it would be for a 6-year-old or for a 75-year-old facing a difficult choice.
I think they should. You could ask whether we're over-treating older children or adults or under-treating preemies, but there's clearly inequality that is morally troubling.
How do you address that? Are you taking your colleagues a little bit to task for the fact that it's like as you described?
We've presented these results at national meetings of pediatricians and neonatologists. They usually generate lively discussion. Some people are adamant that even if there is prejudice, the prejudice is appropriate, that preemies belong in a separate moral category. And they cite sort of long cultural traditions by which newborns are not treated as fully fledged human beings yet. Many religions, for example, will not have naming ceremonies until babies have survived for a few days. So there's this sense that babies are somehow in a tentative category. They have to prove that they're survivors before they're welcomed as full-fledged members of the human community.
That's not an easy issue to resolve.
It's not an easy issue to resolve. The existence of neonatal intensive care itself is in some ways a refutation of that point of view. That is, the fact that we save tiny preemies at all suggests that we've made a moral commitment that's somewhat different than most cultures have made in the past. That I see as a positive thing. It's not surprising, however, that even within that community, there's still debate about appropriate thresholds for treatment.
So for many parents, the survival of a severely handicapped infant is considered the worst outcome, but it doesn't seem that physicians are immune from the stress that that kind of choice puts on them as well.
Oh, sure. I mean, we're all people. Everybody understands how difficult it can be for parents and families to raise a profoundly impaired child. I mean, I think for most doctors, the dilemma is one of prediction. That is, if we knew for certain that a child was going to survive but be profoundly impaired, the discussion and the decision would be a lot easier. What we face instead is imperfect predictors of outcomes, so it's hard to say for certain whether a child will survive, and if they survive, what sort of problems they'll have down the road.
Even with the fact that you have a lot of data for this, it can only inform a decision, really not make the decision.
The data has helped in interesting ways. Our ability to make predictions is much more precise than it was 20 years ago, but it's precise within ranges of uncertainty. So we can now say precisely that of boys born at 23 weeks gestation weighing 500 grams, 30% will do well. But we can't say which individual baby will fall in that 30%.
The ethical question, I guess, the basic questions that will persist for some time, how low is too low when it comes to birth weight, I presume, and who decides and how they decide?
People are evolving practical approaches to those decisions as well. I think the standard in most NICUs in North America and Europe is a process of shared decision-making. Doctors try as hard as they can to give parents the facts as well as they understand them. Parents then talk to each other and talk to their extended family members, talk to their clergy, talk to other important advisors, and together as a group, people try to come up with the decision that's best for this particular baby and this particular family.
So the dilemma will continue.
Oh, in the real world, every premature baby will create a dilemma for the doctors, nurses, and parents, sure.
Dr. John Lantos is the John B. Francis Chair in Bioethics at the Center for Practical Bioethics. He co-authored a commentary on this issue in the February issue of Pediatrics. Dr. Lantos, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to www.practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Laurel LeBou. See you next time on the Bioethics Channel.